This is my space. My construct. This is L.A., boy. People here don't do anything without jacking. This is where I entertain.
Oh, Bobby said, still baffled.
Your turn. Who's back there in that sleaze-ass dance hall?
Jammers? Me, Jackie, Beauvoir, Jammer.
And where were you headed when I grabbed you?
Bobby hesitated. The Yakuza? Jammer has a code.
What for?
The figure moved forward, an animated, sensuous brush sketch.
Help.
Shit. You're probably telling the truth.
I am. Swear to God.
Well, you ain't what I need, Bobby Zero. I've been out cruising cyberspace all up and down trying to find out who killed my man. I thought it was Moss, because we were taking one of theirs for Hosaka, so I hunted up a spook team of theirs. First thing I saw was what they did to your mama's condo. Then I saw three of them drop in on a man they called the Finn, but those three never came back out.
Finn killed him, Bobby said. I saw him. Dead.
You did? Well then, could be we do have things to talk about. After that, I watched the other three use that same launcher on a pimp-mobile.
That was Lucas, he said.
But no sooner had they done it than a copter overflew him and fried all three with a laser. You know anything about that?
No.
You think you can tell me your story, Bobby Zero? Make it quick.
I was gonna do this run, see? And I'd got this icebreaker off Two-A-Day from up the projects, and I...
When he finished, she was silent. The slinky cartoon figure stood by the window as though she was studying the television trees.
I got an idea, he ventured. Maybe you can help us.
No,
she said.
But maybe it'll help you find out what you want.
No. I just want to kill the motherfucker who killed Ramirez.
But we're trapped in there. They're gonna kill us. It's Moss. The people you were following around in the Matrix. They hired a bunch of casuals and gothics.
That's not Moss, she said. That's a bunch of Euros over on Park Avenue. Ice on M a mile deep.
Bobby took that in.
They're the ones in the copter? The ones killed the other Moss guys?
No. I couldn't get a fix on that copter, and they flew south. Lost him. I have a hunch, though. Anyway, I'm sending you back. You want to try that yak code, go ahead.
But lady, we need help.
No percentage in help, Bobby Zero, she said.
And then he was sitting in front of Jammer's deck, the muscles in his neck and back aching. It took him a while before he could get his eyes to focus. So it was nearly a minute before he saw that there were strangers in the room. The man was tall, maybe taller than Lucas, but rangier, narrower at the hips. He wore a kind of baggy combat jacket that hung around him in folds with giant pockets, and his chest was bare except for a horizontal black strap. His eyes looked bruised and feverish, and he held the biggest handgun Bobby had ever seen. A kind of distended revolver with some weird fixture molded under the barrel, a thing like a cobra's head. Beside him, swaying, stood a girl who might have been Bobby's age with the same bruised eyes, though hers were dark, and lank brown hair that needed to be washed. She wore a black sweatshirt several sizes too large and jeans. The man reached out with his left hand and steadied her. Bobby stared, then gaped as the memory hit him. Girl voice, brown hair, dark eyes, the ice eating into him, his teeth burring, her voice, the big thing leaning in.
Vive la Vierge,
Jackie said beside him, rapt, her hand gripping his shoulder hard.
The Virgin of Miracles. She's come, Bobby. Danbala has sent her.
You were under a while, kid, the tall man said to Bobby. What happened? Bobby blinked, glanced frantically around, found Jammer's eyes, glazed with drugs and pain.
Tell him, Jammer said.
I couldn't get to the yak. Somebody grabbed me. I don't know how.
Who? The tall man had his arm around the girl now.
She said her name was Slide from Los Angeles.
Jaylene, the man said. The phone on Jammer's desk began to chime. Answer it, the man said. Bobby turned as Jackie reached over and tapped the call bar below the square screen. The screen lit, flickered, and showed them a man's face, broad and very pale, the eyes hooded and sleepy-looking. His hair was bleached nearly white and brushed straight back. He had the meanest mouth Bobby had ever seen.
Turner, the man said.
We'd better talk now. You haven't got a lot of time left. I think you should get those people out of the room for starts. Chapter 29 Boxmaker. The knotted line stretched on and on. At times they came to angles, forks of the tunnel. Here the line would be wrapped around a strut or secured with a fat, transparent gob of epoxy. The air was as stale but colder. When they stopped to rest in a cylindrical chamber, where the shaft widened before a triple branching, Marley asked Jones for the flat little work light he wore across his forehead on a gray elastic strap. Holding it in one of the red suit's gauntlets, she played it over the chamber's wall. The surface was etched with patterns, microscopically fine lines.
Put your helmet on, Jones advised. You've got a bit of light than mine.
Marley shuddered.
No.
She passed him the light.
Can you help me out of this, please?
She tapped a gauntlet against the suit's hard chest. The mirror-domed helmet was fastened to the suit's waist with a chrome snap-hook.
You'd best keep it, Jones said. It's the only one in the place. I've got one where I sleep, but no air for it. Wick's bottles won't fit my transpirator, and his suit's all hose.
He shrugged.
No, please,
she said, struggling with the catch at the suit's waist, where she'd seen Rez twist something.
I can't stand it.
Jones pulled himself half over the line and did something she couldn't see. There was a click.
Stretch your arms over your head, he said.
It was awkward, but finally, she floated free. Still in the black jeans and white silk blouse she'd worn to that final encounter with Alan. Jones fastened the empty red suit to the line with another of the snap rings mounted around its waist, and then undid her bulging purse.
You want this? To take with you, I mean. We could leave it here. Get it on our way back. No, she said. I'll take it. Give it to me.
She hooked an elbow around the line and fumbled the purse open. Her jacket came out, but so did one of her boots. She managed to get the boot back into the purse, then twisted herself into the jacket.
That's a nice piece of hide, Jones said. Please, she said. Let's hurry.
Not far now, he said, his work light swinging to show her where the line vanished through one of three openings arranged in an equilateral triangle.
Into the line, he said. Literal, that is.
He tapped the chromed eye bolt where the line was tied in the sailor's knot. His voice caught and echoed, somewhere ahead of them, until she imagined she heard other voices whispering behind the round of echo.
We'll want a bit of light for this, he said,
kicking himself across the shaft and catching a gray metal coffin thing that protruded there. He opened it. She watched his hands move in the bright circle of the work light. His fingers were thin and delicate, but the nails were small and blunt, outlined with black impacted grime. The letters CJ were tattooed in crude blue across the back of his right hand. The sort of tattoo one did oneself, in jail. Now he'd fished out a length of heavy, insulated wire. He squinted into the box, then wedged the wire behind a copper deconnector. The dark ahead vanished in a white flood of light.
Got more power than we need, really, he said,
with something akin to a homeowner's pride.
The solar banks are all still working, and they were meant to power the main frames. Come on then, lady. We'll meet the artist you come so far to see.
He kicked off and out, gliding smoothly through the opening, like a swimmer into the light, into the thousand drifting things. She saw that the red plastic soles of his frayed shoes had been patched with smears of white silicon caulking. And then she'd followed, forgetting her fears, forgetting the nausea and constant vertigo, and she was there, and she understood. My God, she said.
Not likely, Jones called. Maybe old Wiggs, though. Too bad it's not doing it now, though. That's even more of a sight.
Something slid past, 10 centimeters from her face. An ornate silver spoon, sawn precisely in half from end to end. She had no idea how long she'd been there when the screen lit and began to flicker. Hours, minutes. She'd already learned to negotiate the chamber after a fashion, kicking off like Jones from the dome's concavity. Like Jones, she caught herself on the thing's folded, jointed arms, pivoted and clung there, watching the swirl of debris. There were dozens of the arms, manipulators, tipped with pliers, hex drivers, knives, a sub-miniature circular saw, a dentist drill. They bristled from the alloy thorax of what must once have been a construction remote. The sort of unmanned, semi-autonomous device she knew from childhood videos of the high frontier. But this one was welded into the apex of the dome, its sides fused with the fabric of the place, and hundreds of cables and optic lines snaked across the geodesics to enter it. Two of the arms, tipped with delicate force feedback devices, were extended. The soft pads cradled an unfinished box. Eyes wide, Marley watched the uncounted things swing past. A yellowing kid glove. The faceted crystal stopper from some vial of vanished perfume. An armless doll with a face of French porcelain. A fat, gold-fitted black fountain pen. Rectangular segments of perf board. The crumpled red and green snake of a silk cravat. Endless, the slow swarm, the spinning things. Jones tumbled up through the silent storm, laughing, grabbing an arm tipped with a glue gun.
Always makes me want to live to see it. But the boxes always make me sad.
Yes, she said. They make me sad too. But there are sadnesses and sadnesses.
Quite right.
He grinned.
No way to make it go, though. Guess the spirit has to move it, or anyway, that's how old Wig has it. He used to come out here a lot. I think the voices are stronger for him here. But lately they've been talking to him wherever it seems like.
She looked at him through the thicket of manipulators. He was very dirty, very young, with his wide blue eyes under a tangle of brown curls. He wore a stained gray sipsuit, its collar shiny with grime.
You must be mad, she said with something like admiration in her voice. You must be totally mad to stay here.
He laughed.
Wiggins madder than a sack of bugs, not me.
She smiled.
No, you're crazy. I'm crazy, too.
Hello, then,
he said, looking past her.
What's this? One of Wig's sermons, looks like. And no way we could shut it off without me cutting the power.
She turned her head and saw diagonals of color strobe across the rectangular face of a large screen glued crookedly to the curve of the dome. The screen was occluded for a second by the passage of a dressmaker's dummy, and then the face of Josef Virik filled it, his soft blue eyes glittering behind round lenses.
Hello, Marley, he said. I can't see you, but I'm sure I know where you are.
That's one of Wig's sermon screens,
Jones said, rubbing his face.
Put him up all over the place, 'cause he figured one day he'd have people up here to preach to. This geezer's linked in through Wig's communication gear, I guess. Who is he?
Virik, she said.
Thought he was older.
It's a generated image, she said. Ray tracing, texture mapping.
She stared as the face smiled out at her from the curve of the dome, beyond the slow-motion hurricane of lost things, minor artifacts of countless lives, tools and toys and gilded buttons.
I want you to know, the image said, that you have fulfilled your contract. My psychoprofile of Marley Khrushchova predicted your response to my gestalt. Broader profiles indicated that your presence in Paris would force Mars to play their hand. Soon, Marley, I will know exactly what it is that you have found. For 4 years I've known something that Mars didn't know. I've known that Mitchell, the man Mars and the world regards as the inventor of the new biochip processes, was being fed the concepts that resulted in his breakthroughs. I added you to an intricate array of factors, Marley, and things came to a most satisfying head. Mars, without understanding what they were doing, surrendered the location of the conceptual source. And you have reached it. Parker will be arriving shortly.
You said you wouldn't follow, she said. I knew you lied.
And now, Marley, at last, I think I shall be free. Free of the 400 kilograms of rioting cells they wall away behind surgical steel in a Stockholm industrial park. Free, eventually, to inhabit any number of real bodies, Marley. Forever.
Shit,
Jones said.
This one's as bad as Wig. What's he think he's talking about?
about his jump,
she said, remembering her talk with Andrea, the smell of cooking prawns in the cramped little kitchen.
The next stage of his evolution.
You understand it?
No, she said. But I know that it will be bad. Very bad.
She shook her head.
Convince the inhabitants of the Calls to admit Paco and his crew, Marley.
Virik said.
I purchased the Calls an hour before you departed Orly from a contractor in Pakistan. A bargain, Marley. A great bargain. Paco will oversee my interests as usual.
And then the screen was dark.
Anna,
Jones said, pivoting around a folded manipulator and taking her hand.
What's so bad about all that? He owns it now. And he said you'd done your bit. I don't know what old Wig's good for, except to listen to the voices. But he's not long for this side anyway. Me arm is easy, for art is not.
You don't understand, she said. You can't. He's found his way to something, something he's sought for years. But nothing he wants can be good. For anyone. I've seen him. I've felt it.
And then the steel arm she held vibrated and began to move. The whole turret rotating with a muted hum of servos. Chapter 30 Hired Man. Turner stared at Conroy's face on the screen of the office phone. Go on. He said to Angie. You go with her. The tall black girl, with the resistors woven into her hair, stepped forward and gently put her arm around Mitchell's daughter, crooning something in that same click-infested Creole. The kid in the t-shirt was still gaping at her, his jaw slack.
Come on, Bobby,
the black girl said. Turner glanced across the desk at the man with the wounded hand, who wore a wrinkled white evening jacket and a bolo tie with thongs of braided black leather. Jammer, Turner decided, the club owner. Jammer cradled his hand in his lap on a blue-striped towel from the bar. He had a long face, the kind of beard that needed constant shaving, and the hard, narrow eyes of a stone professional. As their eyes met, Turner realized that the man sat well out of the line of the phone's camera, his swivel chair pushed back into a corner. The kid in the t-shirt, Bobby, shuffled out behind Angie and the black girl, his mouth still open.
You could have saved us both a lot of hassle, Turner,
Conroy said.
You could have called me. You could have called your agent in Geneva.
How about Hosaka?
Turner said.
Could I have called them?
Conroy shook his head, slowly.
Who are you working for, Conroy? You went double on this one, didn't you?
But not on you, Turner. If it had gone down the way I planned it, you would have been in Bogota with Mitchell. The railgun couldn't fire until the jet was out, and if we cut it right, Hosaka would have figured Moss took the whole sector out to stop Mitchell. But Mitchell didn't make it, did he, Turner?
He never planned to,
Turner said. Conroy nodded.
Yeah.
And the security on the mesa picked up the girl going out. That's her, isn't it, Mitchell's daughter?
Turner was silent.
Sure, Conroy said.
Figures. I killed Lynch,
Turner said, to steer the subject away from Angie.
But just before the hammer came down, Weber told me she was working for you.
They both were, Conroy said. But neither one knew about the other. He shrugged. What for? Conroy smiled.
Because you'd have missed him if they weren't there, wouldn't you? Because you know my style, and if I hadn't been flying all my usual colors, you'd have started to wonder. And I knew you'd never sell out, Mr. Instant Loyalty, right? Mr. Bushido? You were bankable, Turner. Hosaka knew that. That's why they insisted I bring you in.
You haven't answered my first question, Conroy. Who did you go double for?
A man named Virek.
Conroy said.
The money man. That's right, same one. He'd been trying to buy Mitchell for years. For that matter, he'd been trying to buy Moss. No go. They're getting so rich he couldn't touch them. There was a standing offer for Mitchell making the rounds, a blind offer. When Osaka heard from Mitchell and called me in, I decided to check that offer out. Just out of curiosity. But before I could, Virek's team was on me. It wasn't a hard deal to cut, Turner, believe me.
I believe you.
But Mitchell fucked us all over, didn't he, Turner? Good and solid.
So they killed him.
He killed himself,
Conroy said,
according to Virek's moles on the mesa. As soon as he saw the kid off in that ultralight, cut his throat with a scalpel.
Lot of dead people around, Conroy, Turner said. Oki's dead,
and the Jap was flying that copter for you. Figured that when they didn't come back. Conroy shrugged.
They were trying to kill us,
Turner said. No, man, they just wanted to talk. Anyway, we didn't know about the girl then. We just knew you were gone and that the damn jet hadn't made it to the strip in Bogota. We didn't start thinking about the girl until we took a look at your brother's farm and found the jet. Your brother wouldn't tell Oki anything. Pissed off 'cause Oki burned his dogs. Oki said it looked like a woman had been living there too, but she didn't turn up.
What about Rudy?
Conroy's face was a perfect blank.
Then he said,
Oki got what he needed off the monitors. Then we knew about the girl.
Turner's back was aching. The holster strap was cutting into his chest.
I don't feel anything, he thought. I don't feel anything at all.
I've got a question for you, Turner. I've got a couple. But the main one is, what the fuck are you doing in there?
Heard it was a hot club, Conroy.
Yeah. Real exclusive. So exclusive you had to break up two of my doormen to get in. They knew you were coming, Turner. The Spades and that punk. Why else would they let you in?
You'll have to work that one out, Connie. You seem to have a lot of access these days.
Conroy leaned closer to his phone's camera.
You bet your ass. Virek's had people all over the sprawl for months, feeling out a rumor, cowboy gossip, that there was an experimental biosoft floating around. Finally, his people focused on the Finn, but another team, a Moss team, turned up, obviously after the same thing. So Virek's team just kicked back and watched the Moss boys, and the Moss boys started blowing people away. So Virek's team picked up on the Spades and little Bobby and the whole thing. They laid it all out for me when I told them I figured you'd headed this way from Rudy's. When I saw where they were headed, I hired some muscle to ice them in there, until I could get somebody I could trust to go in after them.
Those dusters out there?
Turner smiled.
You just dropped the ball, Connie. You can't go anywhere for professional help, can you? Somebody's twigged that you doubled, and a lot of pros died out there.
So you're hiring shitheads with funny haircuts. The pros have all heard you've got Hosaka after your ass, haven't they, Connie? And they all know what you did. Turner was grinning now. Out of the corner of his eye, he saw that the man in the dinner jacket was smiling, too. A thin smile with lots of neat small teeth, like white grains of corn. It's that bitch Slide, Conroy said. I could have taken her out on the rig. She punched her way in somewhere and started asking questions. I don't even think she's really onto it yet. But she's been making sounds in certain circles. Anyway, yeah, you got the picture. But it doesn't help your ass any. Not now. Virek wants the girl. He's pulled his people off the other thing, and now I'm running things for him. Money, Turner. Money like a zaibatsu. Turner stared at the face, remembering Conroy in the bar of a jungle hotel, remembering him later in Los Angeles, making his pass, explaining the covert economics of corporate defection. Hi, Connie, Turner said. I know you, don't I? Conroy smiled. Sure, baby. And I know the offer already. You want the girl. That's right. And the split, Connie. You know I only work 50-50, right? Hey, Conroy said. This is the big one. I wouldn't have it any other way. Turner stared at the man's image. Well, Conroy said, still smiling. What do you say? And Jammer reached out and pulled the phone's line from the wall plug. Timing, he said. Timing's always important. He let the plug drop. If you'd told him, he'd have moved right away. This way buys us time. He'll try to get back, try to figure what happened. How do you know what I was going to say? Because I seen people, I seen a lot of them, too fucking many. Particularly, I seen a lot like you. You got it written across your face, mister. And you were gonna tell him he could eat shit and die. Jammer hunched his way up in the office chair, grimacing as his hand moved inside the bar towel. Who's this Slide he was talking about, a jockey? Jaylene Slide, Los Angeles Top Gun. She was the one hijacked Bobby, Jammer said. So she's damn close to your pal on the phone. She probably doesn't know it, though. Let's see what we can do about that. Get the boy back in here. Chapter 31 Voices. I'd better find old Wig, he said. She was watching the manipulators, hypnotized by the way they moved. As they picked through the swirl of things, they also caused it, grasping and rejecting. The rejected objects whirling away, striking others, drifting into new alignments. The process stirred them gently, slowly, perpetually. I'd better, he said. What? Go find Wig. He might get up to something if your boss man's people turn up. Don't want him to hurt himself, you know. He looked sheepish, vaguely embarrassed.
Fine, she said. I'm fine, I'll... watch.
She remembered the Wig's mad eyes, the craziness she'd felt roll off him in waves. She remembered the ugly cunning she'd sensed in his voice over the Sweet Jane's radio. Why would Jones show this kind of concern? But then she thought about what it would be like living in the place. The dead cores of Tessier Ashpool.
anything human, anything alive, might come to seem quite precious here.
You're right, she said. Go and find him.
The boy smiled nervously and kicked off, tumbling for the opening where the line was anchored.
I'll come back for you, he said. Remember where we left your suit.
The turret swung back and forth, humming, the manipulators darting, finishing the new poem. She was never certain afterward that the voices were real, but eventually she came to feel that they had been a part of one of those situations in which real becomes merely another concept. She'd taken off her jacket because the air in the dome seemed to have grown warmer, as though the ceaseless movement of the arms generated heat. She'd anchored the jacket and her purse on a strut beside the sermon screen. The box was nearly finished now, she thought, although it moved so quickly in the padded claws that it was difficult to see. Abruptly it floated free, tumbling end over end, and she sprang for it instinctively, caught it, and went tumbling past the flashing arms, her treasure in her arms. Unable to slow herself, she struck the far side of the dome, bruising her shoulder and tearing her blouse. Drifting, stunned, she cradled the box, staring through the rectangle of glass at an arrangement of brown old maps and tarnished mirror. The seas of the cartographers had been cut away, exposing the flaking mirrors, land masses afloat on dirty silver. She looked up in time to see a glittering arm snag the floating sleeve of her Brussels jacket. Her purse, half a meter behind it and tumbling gracefully, went next, hooked by a manipulator tipped with an optic sensor and a simple claw. She watched as her things were drawn into the ceaseless dance of the arms. Minutes later, the jacket came whirling out again. Neat squares and rectangles seemed to have been cut away, and she found herself laughing. She released the box she held.
Go ahead, she said. I am honored.
The arms whirled and flashed, and she heard the whine of a tiny saw.
I am honored, I am honored, I am honored.
Echo of her voice in the dome, setting up a shifting forest of smaller partial sounds, and behind them, very faint, voices.
You're here, aren't you? She called, adding to the ring of sound,
ripples and reflections of her fragmented voice.
Yes, I am here.
Wigan would say you've always been here, wouldn't he?
Yes, but it isn't true. I came to be here. Once I was not. Once, for a brilliant time, time without duration, I was everywhere as well. But the bright time broke. The mirror was flawed. Now I am only one. But I have my song, and you have heard it. I sing with these things that float around me, fragments of the family that funded my birth. There are others, but they will not speak to me. Vain, the scattered fragments of myself like children. Like men. They send me new things, but I prefer the old things. Perhaps I do their bidding. They plot with men, my other selves, and men imagine they are gods.
You are the thing that Virek seeks, aren't you?
No. He imagines that he can translate himself, code his personality into my fabric. He yearns to be what I once was.
what he might become most resembles the least of my broken selves. Are you sad? No, but your songs are sad. My songs are of time and distance. The sadness is in you. Watch my arms. There is only the dance. These things you treasure are shells. I knew that once.
But now the sounds were sounds only. No forest of voices behind them to speak as one voice. And she watched the perfect globes of her tears spin out to join forgotten human memories in the dome of the boxmaker.
I understand,
she said sometime later, knowing that she spoke now for the comfort of hearing her own voice. She spoke quietly, unwilling to wake that bounce and ripple of sound.
You are someone else's collage. Your maker is the true artist. Was it the mad daughter? It doesn't matter. Someone brought the machine here, welded it to the dome, and wired it to the traces of memory. And spilled somehow all the worn, sad evidence of a family's humanity, and left it all to be stirred, to be sorted by a poet, to be sealed away in boxes. I know of no more extraordinary work than this, no more complex gesture.
A silver-fitted tortoise comb with broken teeth drifted past. She caught it like a fish and dragged the teeth through her hair. Across the dome, the screen lit, pulsed and filled with Paco's face.
The old man refuses to admit us, Marley,
the Spaniard said.
The other, the vagabond, has hidden him. Señor is most anxious that we enter the cores and secure his property. If you can't convince Ludgate and the other to open their lock, we will be forced to open it ourselves, depressurizing the entire structure.
He glanced away from the camera, as though consulting an instrument or a member of his crew. You have 1 hour. Chapter 32. Count Zero. Bobby followed Jackie and the brown-haired girl out of the office. It felt like he'd been in jammers for a month, and he'd never get the taste of the place out of his mouth. The stupid little recessed spot staring down from the black ceiling, the fat ultra-suede seats, the round black tables, the carved wooden screens. Beauvoir was sitting on the bar with the detonator beside him and the South African gun across his gray sharkskin lap.
How come you let him in?
Bobby asked when Jackie had led the girl to a table.
Jackie, Beauvoir said. She tranced while you were iced. Legba. Told us the Virgin was on her way up with this guy.
Who is he?
Beauvoir shrugged. A murky looks like. Soldier for the Zaibatsus. Jumped up street samurai. What happened to you when you were iced?
He told him about Jaylene Slide.
L.A.,
Beauvoir said.
She'll drill through diamond to get the man who fried her daddy. But a brother needs help. Forget it.
I'm not a brother.
I think you got something there.
So I don't get to try to get to the Yakuza?
What's Jamma say?
Dick. He's in there now watching your merc take a call.
A call? Who?
Some white guy with a bleach job. Mean looking.
Beauvoir looked at Bobby, looked at the door, looked back.
Legba says sit tight and watch. This is getting random enough already. The sun's of the neon chrysanthemum side.
Beauvoir,
Bobby said, keeping his voice down.
That girl. She's the one. The one in the Matrix when I tried to run that.
He nodded, his plastic frame sliding down his nose.
The Virgin.
But what's happening? I mean...
Bobby, my advice to you is just take it like it comes. She's one thing to me, maybe something different to Jackie. To you, she's just a scared kid. Go easy. Don't upset her. She's a long way from home, and we're still a long way from getting out of here.
Okay.
Bobby looked to the floor.
I'm sorry about Lucas, man. He was
a dude.
Go talk to Jackie and the girl. Beauvoir said. I'm watching the door.
Okay.
He crossed the nightclub carpet to where Jackie sat with the girl. She didn't look like much, and there was only a small part of him that said she was the one. She didn't look up, and he could see that she'd been crying.
I got grabbed,
he said to Jackie. You were flat gone.
So were you,
the dancer said.
Then Legba came to me.
Newmark,
the man called Turner said from the door to Jammer's office.
We want to talk to you.
Gotta go,
he said, wishing the girl would look up, see the big dude asking for him.
They want me.
Jackie squeezed his wrist.
Forget the Yakuza, Jammer said. This is more complicated. You're going into the L.A. grid and locking into a top jock's desk. When Slide grabbed you, she didn't know my desk sussed her number.
She said your deck ought to be in a museum.
Shit she knows, Jammer said. I know where she lives, don't I?
He took a hit from his inhaler and put it back on the deck.
Your problem is she's written you off. She doesn't want to hear from you. You gotta get into her and tell her what she wants to know.
What's that?
But it was a man named Conroy got her boyfriend offed. The tall man said, sprawled back in one of Jammer's office chairs with the huge pistol on his lap. Conroy. Tell her it was Conroy. Conroy hired those big hairs outside.
I'd rather try the yak,
Bobby said.
No, Jammer said. This Slide, she'll be on his ass first. The yak'll measure my favor. Check the whole thing out first. Besides, I thought you were all hot to learn deck.
I'll go with him,
Jackie said from the door. They jacked. She died almost immediately, in the first 8 seconds. He felt it. Rode it out to the edge and almost knew it for what it was. He was screaming, spinning, sucked up through the glacial white funnel that had been waiting for them. The scale of the thing was impossible, too vast, as though the kind of cybernetic megastructure that represented the whole of a multinational had brought its entire weight to bear on Bobby Newmark and a dancer called Jackie. Impossible. But somewhere on the fringe of consciousness, just as he lost it, there was something. Something plucking at his sleeve. He lay on his face on something rough.
opened his eyes. A walk made of round stones, wet with rain. He scrambled up, reeling, and saw the hazy panorama of a strange city with the sea beyond it. Spires there. A sort of church. Mad ribs and spirals of dressed stone. He turned and saw a huge lizard slithering down an incline toward him, its jaws wide. He blinked. The lizard's teeth were green-stained ceramic, a slow drool of water lapping over its blue mosaic china lip. The thing was a fountain, its flanks plastered with thousands of fragments of shattered china. He spun around, crazy with the nearness of her death. Ice. Ice. And a part of him knew then exactly how close he'd really come in his mother's living room. There were weird curving benches covered with the same giddy patchwork of broken china and trees, grass, a park. Extraordinary, someone said. A man rising from his seat on one of the serpentine benches. He had a neat brush of gray hair, a tanned face, and round, rimless glasses that magnified his blue eyes.
You came straight through, didn't you?
What is this?
Where am I?
Güell Park, after a fashion. Barcelona, if you like. You killed Jackie.
The man frowned.
I see. I think I see. Still, you shouldn't be here.
An accident. Accident. You killed Jackie!
My systems are overextended today, the man said, his hands in the pockets of a loose tan overcoat. This is really quite extraordinary.
You can't do that shit, Bobby said, his vision swimming in tears. You can't! You can't kill somebody who was just there!
Just where?
The man took off his glasses and began to polish them with a spotless white handkerchief he took from the pocket of his coat.
Just alive!
Bobby said, taking a step forward. The man put his glasses back on.
This has never happened before.
You can't. Closer now.
This is becoming tedious. Paco!
Señor.
Bobby turned at the sound of the child's voice and saw a little boy in a strange stiff suit with black leather boots that fastened with buttons.
Remove him.
Señor.
The boy said and bowed stiffly, taking a tiny blue Browning automatic from his dark suit coat. Bobby looked into the dark eyes beneath the glossy forelock and saw a look no child had ever worn. The boy extended the gun, aiming it at Bobby.
Who are you?
Bobby ignored the gun, but didn't try to get any closer to the man in the overcoat. The man peered at him.
Virek. Josef Virek. Most people, I gather, are familiar with my face.
Are you on People of Importance or something?
The man blinked, frowning.
I don't know what you're talking about. Paco, what is this person doing here?
An accidental spillover,
the child said, his voice light and beautiful.
We've engaged the bulk of our system via New York in an attempt to prevent Angela Mitchell's escape. This one tried to enter the Matrix along with another operator and encounter our system. We are still attempting to determine how he breached our defenses. You are in no danger.
The muzzle of the little Browning was absolutely steady. And then, the sensation of something plucking at his sleeve. Not his sleeve exactly, but part of his mind. Something
Señor, the child said. We are experiencing anomalous phenomena in the Matrix, possibly as a result of our own current overextension. We strongly suggest that you allow us to sever your links with the construct until we are able to determine the nature of the anomaly.
The sensation was stronger now, a scratching at the back of his mind.
What?
Virik said.
And return to the tanks? It hardly seems to warrant that.
There is the possibility of real danger,
the boy said, and now there was an edge in his voice. He moved the barrel of the Browning slightly.
You,
he said to Bobby, lie down upon the cobbles and spread your arms and legs. But Bobby was looking past him, to a bed of flowers, watching as they withered and died, the grass going gray and powdery as he watched, the air above the bed writhing and twisting. The sense of the thing scratching in his head was stronger still, more urgent. Virik had turned to stare at the dying flowers.
What is it?
Bobby closed his eyes and thought of Jackie. There was a sound, and he knew that he was making it. He reached down into himself, the sound still coming, and touched Jammer's deck.
Come!
He screamed inside himself, neither knowing nor caring what it was that he addressed.
Come now!
He felt something give, a barrier of some kind, and the scratching sensation was gone. When he opened his eyes, there was something in the bed of dead flowers. He blinked. It seemed to be a cross of plain white-painted wood. Someone had fitted the sleeves of an ancient naval tunic over the horizontal arms, a kind of mold-spotted tailcoat with heavy fringed epaulets of tarnished gold braid, rusting buttons, more braid at the cuffs. A rusted cutlass was propped, hilt up, against the white upright, and beside it was a bottle half-filled with clear fluid. The child spun, the little pistol blurring, and crumpled, folded into himself like a deflating balloon, a balloon sucked away into nothing at all. The Browning clattering to the stone path like a forgotten toy.
My name,
a voice said, and Bobby wanted to scream when he realized that it came from his own mouth.
Is Samedi, and you have slain my cousin's horse.
And Virik was running, the big coat flapping out behind him, down the curving path with its serpentine benches, and Bobby saw that another of the white crosses waited there, just where the path curved to vanish. Then Virik must have seen it too. He screamed. And Baron Samedi, Lord of Graveyards, the Loa whose kingdom was death, leaned in across Barcelona, like a cold, dark rain.
What the hell do you want? Who are you?
The voice was familiar. A woman's, not Jackie's.
Bobby,
he said, waves of darkness pulsing through him.
Bobby!
How did you get here?
Jammer. He knew. His deck pegged you when you iced me before.
He'd just seen something huge he couldn't remember.
Turner sent me. Conroy. He said, tell you Conroy did it. You want Conroy.
Hearing his own voice as though it were someone else's. He'd been somewhere and returned, and now he was here in Jaylene Slide's skeletal neon sketch. On the way back, he'd seen the big thing, the thing that had sucked them up, start to alter.